60 Books, presented by Store Consulting and Coaching. December 1955, Montgomery, Alabama. A woman refuses to give up her seat. Decades later, when she was asked to describe herself, the phrase people who knew her kept returning to was not fiery or defiant. It was quiet. One biography is titled with the words quiet strength. The author of today's book asks a question about that. If we assume power looks like force and presence and volume, what do we do with a person whose courage arrived without any of it? Today, Quiet by Susan Cain. In two sentences, Western workplaces are built around an ideal of the outgoing, quick-speaking, group-oriented personality, and that ideal is a cultural preference rather than a measure of ability. Somewhere between a third and a half of people are wired differently, and we have designed the office, the school, and the meeting against them. From the reading room, this is 60 Books. I'm Miles. 60 of the best management books of the last 100 years, one per episode, read for leaders and teams who think differently, and for work where AI is now part of the job. Nora, I want to be careful with this one, and I will say why in a minute.
Because introversion is not neurodivergence, and this show should not blur them. Agreed, and we will come back to it.
Start with the historical claim, because it is the part most people miss.
Cain borrows from the cultural historian Warren Sussman, who argued that America shifted at the start of the 20th century from what he called a culture of character to a culture of personality.
Meaning?
In the older frame, what mattered was who you were when nobody was watching. Duty, integrity, seriousness. In the newer one, what mattered was the impression you made, and you can watch the change in the self-help literature. 19th century advice books tell you to be good. 20th century ones tell you to be magnetic.
What drove it?
Urbanization and the corporation. People stopped working among neighbors who had known them for 30 years and started working among strangers who would form a view in 10 minutes. When your reputation cannot precede you, presentation becomes the technology.
And the result?
What she calls the extrovert ideal. The belief that the ideal person is sociable, comfortable in the spotlight, quick to speak, and happiest in a group. And her point is that this became invisible. It stopped being a preference and became a description of competence.
The biology.
This is the strongest evidence in the book, and it comes from Jerome Kagan's longitudinal work at Harvard. He tested infants at around 4 months by exposing them to novel stimuli, unfamiliar sounds and smells, and moving objects.
And?
About 20% reacted strongly. Thrashing, crying, high arousal. He called them high reactive. Around 40% stayed calm. And he predicted that the high reactive babies would become the more cautious, inward, observant teenagers.
Which is backwards from intuition.
Completely backwards. The loud babies become the quiet adults, because high reactivity means the nervous system responds strongly to stimulation, and a person built that way seeks less of it. And when he followed those children into adolescence, the prediction largely held.
So it is not a preference.
There is a temperamental substrate underneath it, present in infancy, before any of the socialization, the culture will later add on top.
The author.
Susan Cain. Princeton, then Harvard Law, then 7 years as a corporate lawyer doing Wall Street negotiations, which is a notable career for someone who describes herself as deeply introverted. Then negotiation consulting, then this book in 2012.
And the talk.
Her 2012 conference talk became one of the most watched ever given, which she has described as a fairly excruciating thing to have prepared for. She founded an organization around the book, and in 2022 published Bittersweet, about melancholy and longing.
A useful detail.
She spent about a year working on the public speaking specifically, in a deliberate practice way, because she had decided the message required it, which is itself an example of one of her own concepts.
Take me through the workplace material, because that is what a chief executive will quote at you.
Three claims: group brainstorming, open plan offices, and the leadership assumption.
Brainstorming.
The technique was popularized in the 1950s on the premise that groups generate more and better ideas than individuals. The research has not been kind. When you compare a group brainstorming together against the same number of people working alone and pooling results afterward, the separated individuals typically produce more ideas and ideas rated as better.
Why?
Several mechanisms. Only one person can talk at a time, so the others are waiting rather than thinking. People converge on whatever was said first, and there is evaluation apprehension, which is a formal way of saying that people do not offer the odd idea in front of colleagues.
And the fix is not complicated.
Generate alone, combine together, which happens to be a substantial accommodation and a productivity improvement at the same time, and it costs nothing.
Open plan offices.
Kane argued against them in 2012, largely from noise and interruption research. The strongest evidence arrived afterward, and it is worth citing precisely. In 2018, Ethan Bernstein and Stephen Turbin published a study in Philosophical Transactions of the Royal Society B. They put sensors on employees at two corporate headquarters before and after each move to an open plan.
And found
that face-to-face interaction fell by roughly 70% and electronic messaging rose to replace it. The architecture designed to produce collaboration produced withdrawal. People put on headphones and typed at each other.
Which is a wonderful result.
It is the rare case where the intervention produced the exact opposite of its stated purpose, measured directly rather than by survey.
And leadership.
She reviews evidence that introverted leaders can outperform extroverted ones, specifically when the team is proactive, because they are more likely to let the team's ideas run rather than putting their own stamp on everything. The effect reverses with a passive team. So the answer is contingent rather than a virtue claim, and she is careful about that.
Free trait theory, because I want to spend time here.
From the psychologist Brian Little. The idea is that people can and do act out of character, sometimes for long stretches, in service of what he calls core personal projects, something they care about enough to pay the cost.
And the cost is real.
He is explicit that it is. Acting out of character is depleting, and it requires what he calls restorative niches, time and space to return to type. His own example is retreating to a bathroom stall at a conference to escape sociability between sessions.
Now say the thing this show has to say about that.
Free trait theory is a description of masking with the cost acknowledged, and Kane treats it as a reasonable bargain. For our audience, the bargain looks different, because the research on autistic camouflaging consistently links sustained masking to exhaustion and burnout, and because the choice is frequently not voluntary. Little's professor chooses to be outgoing for his students. An autistic employee masks because the alternative is losing the job.
Same behavior, different economics.
And a different remedy. Kane's remedy is a restorative niche, which is recovery time. That is genuinely useful, and I would take it. But the deeper remedy is reducing how much of the day requires acting out of character at all, and that is a design question rather than a recovery question.
Now the caution I flagged at the top.
Introversion is not autism, and it is not ADHD. Kane herself is careful, and popular readings of the book are not. Introversion is a normal dimension of personality, concerned with where you get and lose energy. Autism involves differences in social communication, sensory processing, and attention. A person can be an extroverted autistic person, and a great many are, and they are erased by the conflation.
Why does the mistake matter practically?
Because it downgrades a support need into a preference. If a manager files a sensory issue under he is a bit of an introvert, then the noise-canceling headphones become a personality accommodation rather than an access one, and the first time there is a conflict, it loses.
And what genuinely does transfer?
The environmental critique, almost entirely. The open plan finding, the brainstorming finding, and the observation that meetings reward fast verbal processing rather than good thinking. Those are conditions, and conditions are shared. The extrovert ideal is also precisely the filter that penalizes autistic candidates in interviews, for exactly the reasons Kane describes, arrived at from a different direction.
What has not held up?
The conflation problem is the main one, and it runs through the book. Kane moves between introversion, shyness, sensitivity, and high reactivity in ways that make the argument feel bigger than the evidence. Shyness is fear of social judgment. Introversion is a preference about stimulation. Kagan's high reactivity is a temperament measure. They correlate. They are not the same, and treating them as one construct is the reason the book is easy to overapply.
The type problem.
Introversion and extroversion form a continuous dimension, and most people are near the middle. Talking about introverts and extroverts as two kinds of people is a convenience that the underlying trait research does not support, and it is how you end up with personality types on a whiteboard.
And the advocacy question.
This is a book with a thesis it wants you to accept, and it selects evidence accordingly. The strongest claims, the temperament work and the brainstorming research, are well supported. The looser cultural arguments are essays.
The tier.
Advocacy journalism, resting on a genuinely solid core of temperament research, with a real and confirmed environmental critique attached, and a category problem that a careful reader has to hold in mind throughout.
The recap in this show's frame. Quiet says the modern workplace is built around a personality rather than around performance. For a neurodivergent leader, or one leading neurodivergent people, the operating instructions are these. Generate alone and combine together, because that is better for output, and it is an accommodation nobody has to request. Treat the open plan as a measured failure rather than a matter of taste, since the study found interaction fell by about 70%. Notice that your interviews and meetings reward speed of speech rather than quality of thought, and that this is the same filter that removes autistic candidates. And keep the categories separate. Introversion is a preference, sensory and processing differences are access needs, and filing the second under the first is how support quietly gets downgraded. And AI.
This one is unusually clean, because the book's core complaint is about the medium.
Explain.
Kane's argument is that we run organizations on real-time verbal performance, and that this measures something other than thinking. Asynchronous written work removes that constraint. A written proposal, considered overnight, is judged on content in a way that the same idea offered third in a fast meeting is not.
And where the tools come in.
They lower the cost of the written form for people who find writing slow, which is a real barrier and often invisible. And they give someone a way to rehearse the meeting they are dreading, or to convert a page of dense thinking into the two sentences the room will actually absorb.
And the transcription point.
Worth naming. Meeting transcripts and summaries mean that not capturing everything live is no longer a penalty, which is one of the quieter accommodations available today, and it helps the person with auditory processing difficulty as much as the person who simply thinks slowly and well.
The dangers.
2. If everyone's writing becomes uniformly polished, the written channel loses the signal it was providing, and organizations will drift back to judging people live. And the Bernstein finding is the warning underneath all of this. We already replaced conversation with typing once, by accident, and called it collaboration.
The usual caution.
Evidence that AI support improves outcomes for neurodivergent workers is early and mostly practitioner reports. Promising practice, not established fact.
Nora, thank you.
My pleasure.
That is Quiet. Next time on 60 Books, The 5 Dysfunctions of a Team by Patrick Lencioni and the question of whether trust can be built on purpose. I'm Miles. See you then.